Cool. So spring harvest, is a few of us went away over Easter, and I just thought chat a bit about that, and yeah, some things God taught me through it. So spring harvest, well, what can we say about it? It's one of those bizarre times when Butlins is taken over by a load of Christians. I'm pretty sure that alcohol level sales drop massively, and it's replaced by loads of Costas and hot milk. I often wonder what the Butlins staff must think as they walk around hearing worship music playing, people praying for each other. It's a time where nightclubs and different venues are transformed into children's worship venues, and an abandoned swimming pool becomes home to a distinctive venue. This is the 11 to 14 venue that me and a few others here got to work with around 600 young people in. It was a venue that had no running water, no toilets, smell of chlorine, but we got to journey with some of the most amazing young people. We got to sing worship songs, pray powerful prayers, and we saw chains broken, Jesus was met, and lives were transformed. It was 2 weeks, 600 young people, one pretty much falling down venue, but I remembered that we have one amazing God. The first week we were there, I was in charge of running the additional needs work. It was amazing, challenging, humbling, and inspiring. The second week was spent serving the main bulk of young people, getting the chance to worship alongside them, pray for them, and run seminars. They were two very different experiences, but both amazing weeks. The main theme for the year was game changers, and focused a lot on the story of Moses, and then challenged the young people to change the game in their lives in whatever form that looked like when they got back home. It was a really exciting theme that we explored over the 2 weeks and left us all feeling challenged but empowered to go home and change the game. Over the next 3 Sunday night services that we're doing, me, Holly and Noms are all going to share some of what particularly challenged us from our time there. For me, it was mainly about comparison and how this can stand in the way of our worship. Malcolm Duncan writes, "Society needs more than a nice church. It needs a bold, courageous, and faithful church." And he goes on to say, "The church of Jesus was once known as those who turned the world upside down. May our day and our generation see us become known as that again. Lord, do it in me, do it in others. Light the fire, Lord, and change the game." To do this, we need to step out our comfort zones, be bold in who we are and who we are in God. We need to step out, challenge what culture says, and we need to be authentic. This can't happen if we're comparing ourselves with others and trying to be a copy of another person. God made us who we are for a reason, and when we're trying to change that, we're pretty much just dishonouring that plan. In a society that claims we should be better and be someone else, God tells us to be who he created us perfectly to be. We started the week at Spring Harvest, getting the young people to think about the things that got in the way of them doing what God had planned for them, what hurdles they had to overcome. In the passage Adam read before, we see clearly this in Moses' story. We see how he tries to make up every reason why he isn't good enough for God's work. After various reasons, he states in verse 10, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." This shows some of the hurdles Moses personally had to overcome, things that stood in the way of him doing what God had asked him to do and who God had created him to be. Imagine that he is standing on the beginning of a racetrack and looks forward and sees hurdles in front of him. I feel like the first one would say people on it. He doubts the people, how they'll react to him, what if they don't believe him, what if they laugh at him. Him and God kind of overcome that hurdle, and he's faced with another one. The second one says him across it. Moses thinks he's not good enough, and he's not right for the job. He knows he can't speak very well. He chats about that with God, and then kind of hits the next one that says doubt in God. It appears that Moses doubts God's even chosen the right person, and that God will help him when he gets there. I feel like then it almost just gets to the point where Moses is like, God, if you just send someone else, this will solve the whole issue. There's masses of comparison going on. Moses is basically saying there's someone much better for the job than he is. How many times do we feel like that? We put up those barriers and hurdles in the way of doing what we feel like we're meant to be doing. Whether it's the fact that we don't have the skills, the time, the self-belief, we can often tell ourselves that there's someone better for the job. Moses had just had this amazing encounter with God. He speaks to him in a burning bush, and it's so clear to him what God has said. And yet he still doubts that it's him that God wants to do to the job. The Message version writes in verse 11, Moses answers God, "But why me? What makes you think that I could ever go?" It's almost like Moses has said, "Yes, God, I've heard your voice, but I think you've got the wrong person." The reassuring thing is that God calls us, like he called Moses, to do something and be someone that no one else could be. He uses our weaknesses to do something amazing. Luckily for us, God also listens to our worries and concerns and equips us or sends others alongside to help us. Like we see in this passage, God sends Aaron with Moses, not to replace him or because Aaron was better for the job, but to support Moses. It was still Moses' job, but God equipped him through Aaron. It's easy to look at Moses, like so many other people in the Bible, and see the amazing things they did, the leadership they had, their relationship with God, but forget that they struggled and doubted their ability. In this story, for example, we remember that amazing encounter Moses had with the bush and all the amazing things he goes on to do, but sometimes we just forget this doubting bit in the middle. The disciples are another example. They spent all their time with Jesus and still fought over who was the best, which one was Jesus' favourite, and probably compared their ministry to. They doubted their ability, and we see that over and over again. The time that Jesus was in their boat and they were still convinced they were going to drown. When Peter tries to walk on water and fails because Jesus has stood in front of him. Following one of the talks that was given at Spring Harvest, I had a really strong conviction to go talk to the young people about my struggles of comparison growing up. This especially surrounded me comparing myself to my sister. How it affected me, and just to encourage the other young people to surrender that. I got the chance after that to pray with some girls who were going through the crippling effects of comparison, feeling that they weren't good enough and they couldn't be used by God. One girl in particular cried as she told me how much she compared herself to others. She felt like she was worthless and couldn't believe that she was lovable. It was amazing to sit with her and pray with her and just to share stories, and she left feeling reassured that God could use her and actually she did matter. Another girl told me how her sister was always the best. She was got the parts they needed in some acting play, and she always felt like she didn't quite ever measure up. And we prayed about it for ages and chatted, and actually she just left smiling. She looked lighter. These amazing girls had taken the first step to be prayed for and to share some of their story. They had had their burning bush moments. They encountered God and they reacted to him, and hopefully this is the start of an amazing journey they will go on with him. Theodore Roosevelt said, "Comparison is the thief of joy." This is a quote I stumbled across really randomly, but it hit home massively. I believe there is a strong correlation between when we're happiest in ourselves and when we can see how God created us and we're secure in this. This allows us to be filled with joy. It's when we doubt ourselves, compare ourselves with others, doubt God's master plan, then that's when that joy starts to be stripped away. God wants us to be the best versions of ourselves, not to try and transform ourselves to anyone else. This links in with when Jesus speaks in John 10:10 to say, "I have come to give life and life in its fullest." Life in its fullest is easier to grasp when we can see who God has made us to be and can be okay in that. This is illustrated beautifully in Max Lucado's book, You Are Special. I'm sure many of you have read it. The story is of a town of wooden people called Wemmicks. Each Wemmick is different, but each one was made by the same carver, Eli. Each day, each Wemmick has a box, has two boxes, one full of golden star stickers and one of grey dot stickers, and they go round sticking them on each other. Stars for those who looked pretty and were talented, and dots for those who weren't so pretty or had no talent. We meet the character Punchinello, who whatever he did, it kind of went wrong. He would say the wrong thing, and therefore he was just covered in dots. He felt like he was not a good enough Wemmick, and therefore started not to go outside. One rare trip out, he meets a Wemmick called Lucia, who had no stickers on it at all. People would try and give her stickers, but they just fell off. When Punchinello asks her how she has no stickers, Lucia says she goes to see Eli the woodcarver every day and just sits with him. The next day, Punchinello goes to see Eli, and although he feels ashamed, Eli calls him by name and tells him that he thinks Punchinello is so special and that he created him, and that's what matters. He wants Punchinello to come and see him every day. When Punchinello starts to believe the words and the love that Eli has for him, the spots slowly start to fall off. The story ends with these words: "You are special because I made you and I don't make mistakes." This is a very simple story with a lot of meaning. How much do we feel like that? Maybe we aren't physically wearing stars or grey dots, but we might feel like we might as well be. If only we could be better, funnier, prettier, we would get further and be more liked. But that's not how God sees us. He takes us exactly how we are. When we're reflecting more on this story, I was drawn massively to the fact that Lucia went and spent time with her creator, and afterwards she left looking different. Punchinello could tell that there was something different about her. This led me again to think about Moses, this time in Exodus 34, which is where Moses comes down from the mountain, and after encountering God, his face was radiant. It was so radiant, in fact, that people were scared to go talk to him. Every time he went to speak with God after that, his face would come back radiant. Moses had climbed that mountain, met with God, chatted to him like a friend talks to a friend, and kind of comes down unaware that his face is so radiant. But this shows how close he's been with God. He has spent time with his creator and he's changed for it. The Moses who we see through Exodus, doubting his ability, doubting God, comparing himself to others, is stood there with such a radiant face because he has spent time just being and speaking with God. The people recognised that. They recognised that he had been with God. How challenging is that? Are we people who others would just look at and recognise that we have been in God's presence? What if, instead of us wanting people to comment on the clothes we wear, the money we own, the technology we have, we became people who were striving to spend that much time with our Creator and wanted people to almost comment on the fact that we reflected God in our lives, which then projected out onto theirs? Before running the additional needs work at Spring Harvest, I have quite a lot of contact with the parents beforehand, finding out more about the individual young people and how we can cater for their needs. In one of the emails from a mum I got, it said, "I am sure you can help her make sense of the activities, although the Bible teaching may be difficult for her to access. The most important thing is she sees your enthusiasm for the Lord, as that will keep her wanting to do Christian things." This brought it home for me again. The most important thing she sees is your enthusiasm for the Lord. This girl couldn't grasp all the Bible teaching and couldn't make sense of all the discussion. But what she could do is see how the team were, how we acted, how we worshipped, and this could be the example to her. Although, to be honest, she probably challenged me a lot more than I did for her. I'm going to call her Hannah for this story. She's a 12-year-old girl who had Down syndrome and was a joy to be around. She would often dance across the back of a venue. One day we were out doing a scavenger hunt and she decided that the water fountain would be a lot more fun to play in. So she just ran into it and was drenched head to toe. Another day, during the worship, the band had split the young people in half and there was an aisle down the middle. Hannah just walked straight down the aisle and started dancing in the gap, as if it had been made for her to take centre stage. All we could do was just stand there and smile. But actually, it made us want to dance with her. The best moment for me in the whole of Spring Harvest was one night the additional needs team and the additional needs young people had the most amazing time dancing at the back to Wren Collective's Build Your Kingdom Here. It was chaotic and it was crazy, but it was so joyful and filled with laughter. And that's what challenged me. If we let our guard down and worship, we break out of what we're told to be. We are bold and we push beyond the social norms. We're freer, we're less guarded, and what would that look like? What situations would we actually change and speak into if we were so much freer in our relationship with God? Is this partly, I wonder, what Jesus is getting at when he speaks in Luke 18:15-17? People were also bringing babies to Jesus for him to place his hands on them. When the disciples saw this, they rebuked him. But Jesus called the children to him and said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly I tell you, anyone who does not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it." Or as the Message version writes the end part, "Unless you accept God's kingdom in the simplicity of a child, you'll never get in." When we watch children play and talk to other children, they make friends very easily, get on with others, and just accept each other. I've always pondered, when do we lose that? At what age do we become more guarded? When do we stop just having that openness? Sometimes we need to go back to that childlike state. We need to be bolder, be more accepting, more loving, and just unguarded in our relationship with God and our worship. It's when we compare ourselves to others, I think we stop that. We look at how we are, and we just lose some of that freeness. This is what Hannah and the other young people taught me about. They were so free in their worship and bold in their answers and their faith when we talked about it. One final story. The team and the additional needs team were sat in our little, what we called, additional needs tent, chatting in our small group time about who God has made us to be and the talents we've been given. I asked what talents they had been given from God. One girl said to me, as if it should have been totally obvious, "I have hundreds of talents. I'm good at art, I'm good at being a friend, I'm good at baking," and so on, so on. Then we looked at whether we found it was hard to trust God, and she said, "Well, I know that God's real because he's made me talented." Don't hear this wrong. She definitely wasn't being boastful. She just knew that God had made her, he had gifted her, and it was as simple as that. And I think sometimes we need to hear that. Like Max Lucado says in his book, "You are special because I made you and I don't make mistakes." We're now going to spend a bit of time reflecting on this. Something I did with the young people at Spring Harvest, and I just brought it here as well, is that on the front and the bench, there's sheets of paper that have one Psalm 139 on it in three different translations. Maybe you need to just come and read this and remember who we are in God and how the Creator sees us. There are pens and paper there, so if you feel like you need to just copy some of it out or write on them, that's totally great. I just think it's an absolutely amazing verse, and we just sometimes need to have it read over us. There's also going to be a song on in the background, which is an amazing song called Bethel, called No Longer Slaves. Maybe you need to just sit and listen to the lyrics and reflect on them. They talk about how we are no longer slaves to fear, as we are God's children, and how he has liberated us. If you want to pray with someone, do that. Grab them, chat with them, and just pray for boldness or for how we can be free in our worship. If you feel like there's anything that you want to come and share, any encouragement or stories, please do. Just feel free to worship God, our Creator, who formed each one of us in our mother's wombs and loves each part of us.
You unravel me with a melody. You surround me with a song. I deliver rest from my enemies till all my fears have come. I'm no longer a slave. Thank you.
You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to retain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Surely the darkness will hide me, and the light become night around me. But even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I think in that song where it's saying, just I am a child of God, I am a child of God. I think sometimes we get so caught up in I can do this or I can't do that, I'm good at this, I'm not good at that. But all we need to remember is just that line over again, that I am a child of God. And what else is there? But I am a child of God. The band's going to get up now and we're going to worship a bit more. And as they're playing their first song, like I always do, just a time for testimony and sharing. So if you've got something that has happened recently, that God's just done something that you feel like you want to share, or something from tonight God's spoken to you, please just come down to the front as they're doing the first song, and then we'll have a bit of testimony time before we worship some more. So please just be bold, we're all here together and would love to hear from you. So thanks, guys.
I hope I'm going to reflect a little bit of what Emma has just talked to us about so wonderfully. I was asked to join the team to help at Spring Harvest, and I have to be honest with you and say I thought John had got it wrong when he asked me. I said, okay. But I really did think, like Moses, I didn't know it was going to be about Moses either, but I did think that he'd got it wrong. But I went, and I just had the most amazing privilege to work with an amazing team of people who whose passion for the gospel and willingness to share their lives was just truly inspiring. I could say something about each individual member, but it's just enough to say it was a real privilege to be there and just see God at work, and that's all I want to say.
Me and the RPR girls raised money for 15 bunk beds for Children's Vision International. And it's amazing to see what you can do when you trust in God, and to think how many lives will change because of some hard work and God's help. Because of this, many children in Bogota have a hope for a future. God really showed us he believed in this cause when the exchange rate was raised and we were able to buy mattresses and a few more beds. And this was lots more than we expected. So we recently just got the report from Richard Sanderson, who's the owner of the charity. So, yeah.